Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Ryan Cote, who is the Director of Digital Services and partner at Ballantine's, which is a third-generation family-owned direct mail and digital marketing company based out of Fairfield, New Jersey. He's been with Ballantine's since 2003, which is a family-owned business that was started in 1966 by his great-uncle. And Ryan now manages the growing digital marketing division. From lead generation to marketing strategy for small businesses, Ryan and his company rise above the get-featured-quick schemes so often attributed to digital marketing. We all know what they are. He also loves to geek out on technical marketing talk, as well as work with real-world business owners about growing their book of business in today's online world. Now, today, Ryan is going to share some lessons that were learned from a third-generation family business, which I think is very important. Part of it is how to integrate print and digital media and marketing, search engine optimization, self-improvement, such as the importance of morning routines. People who are very successful talk about this a lot, by the way. And we'll talk about leadership and so much more. Ryan, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Hey, Denise. Super happy to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. We were having a little bit of trouble getting you dialed in, and I was starting to panic just a bit, so good to see you here.
All is good.
Listen, yeah, we had a terrific pre-interview talk, and you shared so much information. I'm really looking forward to having you share it with our audience. So before we get started, tell people a little bit about yourself that I wasn't able to get into the intro.
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about myself on a personal note. So I'm 40 years old, married for 13 years now. I have three daughters. They're 9, 7, and 5. They all do dance. That makes me, I guess, a dance dad. I was actually at a competition last night. So that's me. Like I love self-improvement, like you mentioned, fitness and just marketing and business in general, entrepreneurship. In terms of the business, yeah, it goes back to the mid-60s. My great uncle started the company. I used to be the marketing director for the company for 10 years and then transitioned into a new role, which is basically leading the digital division, which was just had to learn a lot along the way there just from managing a team. And I'm sure we'll go into some of that, but that's where I'm at right now. I mostly do sales and strategy for the digital division of the business.
Now, this, if I understood you correctly when we spoke last, this digital, I'm stumbling today. I don't know why. I'm just going to apologize straight out of the chute. It's like somebody coated my tongue with something. I can't talk. I don't know what happened. You ever have days like that where you just go, what the heck did I just say? Today is that day.
Of course.
Okay,
yeah.
So it happens. So if I understood correctly, you actually started this division and kind of talked the family into it, or was it already there?
I started it. I was the marketing director for about 10 years, and I've always had a digital background, though. I've had websites. I've taught myself SEO. I've always been interested in digital. And so how it worked, what happened is I went to my father and my uncle. My father retired 2 years ago, but this is going back when he was still here. I said, hey, I think we can offer clients digital, because then we were just direct mail. I think we can offer our clients digital. And so we started out just doing search engine optimization, because that's what I knew best. And I still had to do the marketing for the company. So I had like a little side thing going for Ballantine, doing SEO for clients and trying to get clients. And for the first 2 years, it was just me doing that, trying to pretend like I was bigger and still trying to market the company. And then things started to shift a little bit. Like my youngest brother came into the company to help on the digital side. And, everyone, we all have our strengths and weaknesses, right? And so his strengths complemented my weaknesses and vice versa. And that's when things really started to gel. We started to get bigger clients, which enabled us to hire team members. I still remember the first client that we got. that was big enough that enabled us to hire our first person, the first team member. It was pretty exciting. I still remember that moment. And then from there, just, you know, it's been nice steady growth for the last 5 years.
Congratulations. Let's talk a bit about direct marketing now. You know, direct mail. I have to be honest with you. I'm one of those people. I get those things in the mailbox, and I consider them glossy spam. They irritate me. And it just, but that's just me. I don't want a bunch of junk in my mailbox. I'm more digital. You know, that's just always been my preference. Let me read it. Let me scan it. Move on. Don't make me throw it away. So it seems to me, and I know that there's a huge liking for it and a big need for it. You know, a lot of people really like it, or it still wouldn't exist, right? So, but wasn't there a point maybe 10 years ago where it was really kind of going off the grid? And I'm just remembering that a lot of people were saying, oh, man, we can't sell, you know, postcards or, you know, these direct mail pieces. And that went on for a while. And now it seems to me, and I really wanted to ask you about this, that there seems to be a big resurgence in direct mail pieces. Am I way off base there or close?
No, yeah. Actually, everything you're saying is pretty spot on. We're definitely, so the print side of our business this year is doing very well, and in the last 3 years as well. I mean, we're in a good economy too, but we've had, you know, it's been several really good years for the print side. I mean, everyone says print is dead, and I can never tell if that's just to create media buzz, what have you. But I think the right wording is that direct mail is changing. I mean, I think back to, so I was in the company in the 80s and 90s, but, you know, it's family business, so I was always around it. And so, you know, we used to do all the stamp sheets for Columbia House. We used to do all the disc mailers for AOL. And these companies, they were just spending gobs of money on direct mail. And they were just mailing it to everyone, you know. Now what's happening is it's just changed. It's more targeted. The campaigns are smaller volume. The data is better now, so the marketers can target their audience in a better way. So you don't have to do the spray and pray model. You can really get targeted. So the campaign volumes have changed, have been reduced, and you know the equipment's gotten better. So you can do more personalized mailers. You can, you know, swap out images. There's just a lot more. There's a lot. The equipment's much better, so you can get more personalized with your campaigns. So I would say
right. It's
just changed. It's not dead by any means.
And see, that makes perfect sense. And I have to tell you, when you mentioned AOL and all those mailers, I did what we call in the South a whole body freeze long, which is a shudder. I just, because you could not.
there were
craft sites that would tell you how to make Christmas ornaments out of those discs. It's like, really?
I mean, it was, they just need
horrible.
Something with a pulse, you know? So they just need something
yeah.
with a pulse. Everyone got one.
Exactly.
But, you know,
and I kept thinking, how can anybody even afford to work with these people because they're spending all their money on these stupid discs? You know, every time I would see one, I would mentally calculate what it was costing them and the trickle-down effect to the customer. That's just how my brain works.
Yeah, I mean, but you are right about the resurgence, though. Like I said, you know, I think what's happening, digital is great. You can measure it. And we have so many different channels at our disposal, and it's going to be growing. I'm sure there's new channels that are going to be popping up. Direct mail, though, it's expensive with the postage, but you can get your marketing message physically in their hands, and there's less competition in the mailbox. You might be competing with 20 people, 15, 10, 10 companies. The bottom line, though, is that everyone needs to go through the mail because they need to get their bills and letters from, you know, maybe letters from family, friends, mostly bills, but so they have to go through the mail. So it's something that, you know, the person, yeah, they might be skimming through it over the trash bin, but they have to go through their mail. There's less competition. And so that's why I think marketers are starting to see, kind of understand that and want to test it in addition to the digital stuff, which is equally as important.
You know what I'm finding, Ryan? We all of us are just buried under newsletters and spam, and, you know, some of it's pretty nasty. And unfortunately, marketers, and I'm talking digital marketers, you know, people who are wanting you to buy their course or whatever it is that they're wanting, they will spam you. I mean, listen, if I get a newsletter, you know, that all of a sudden popped up and it's on my personal email address, I'll come after you because I know I didn't give you that. I only use a Yahoo account for that stuff. And I know where, if it goes there, it means I probably signed up for it. Maybe not, but if you hit my email address, it's personal and private, that's a no-go. But that being said, I'm finding that every once in a while, I will go ahead and sign up. Excuse me, hang on just a second. It's going to be one of those voice days, I'm telling you. I will actually sign up deliberately for somebody's written, posted, you know, mailed to me newsletter. And I've only got about three of them, and I have to tell you, I'll stack them. They're like a book. You get a bunch of books, you stack them, I'll get to them. But there comes a point where you're like, oh, I want to see what I'll, and all of a sudden the yellow highlighter comes out, and you're having a good time with it. Now, if it's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of emails, that might get missed. So I can see the allure for that. It's taken me a while, yeah, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, I actually do the same thing. So I belong to digital newsletters for like news and sports, what have you. But I belong to a newsletter for sales training. And they send you a digital version, but they also mail you a physical hard copy of the newsletter. And I look forward to getting that thing. It comes to my mailbox and I read it and I take notes on it. And so, yeah, I feel the same way.
But see, that's information I asked for. So I'm not miffed when it shows up.
Right.
I still am holding my old grudge about the mailbox spam. Both of them.
Well,
digital.
It's easy. It's inexpensive. Digital. It's easy to be spammy because it's just what does it take or cost to send out an email? And that's the downside of you've got a lot of aggressive marketers that will send out stuff unsolicited.
Mm-hmm. And when you're talking with people, when you're talking with a potential client, what are some of the biggest questions that they're asking about? Because I know a lot of them are probably, look, we can do this digital, you know, on a newsletter. Why should we pay to do this? You're going to pay either way. But what are some of the most common questions that you hear from people when you're saying, listen, you know, here's how it works, here's how it happens? Is there anything that you really have to overcome when you're talking with them?
For direct mail or digital or both?
For direct mail. You know, people like me are like, I don't want that stuff. And don't put that in my mailbox. Let's pretend I'm your client. You have to convince me.
Well, so I can answer that. So I have a unique perspective on that because the Ballantine here, you know, we have the direct mail side. We have huge clients that mail a lot of mail. On the digital side, we work more with small businesses. So we're sort of like two companies in one in terms of the clients that we service. On the direct mail side, you don't really have to sell them because we work with a lot of like nonprofits and travel companies, and in those industries, direct mail is huge. You have to be doing it. You have to mail out a catalog of your cruise itinerary. You have to mail out a package to get a donation for a fundraising campaign. So there's not really that selling them, but if I think back to if I looked at digital, you know, we're starting to get, even though our clients are small businesses, we're starting to get more and more requests for direct mail because they like the idea of it being like another touch point. It's okay, we're doing well with search engine optimization or paid ads or social. Like, what else can we do? Oh, what about a postcard? I want to get in their mailbox. I want that multiple touch point, something that we haven't tested, something my competitors aren't doing. That's usually what I hear. They get a little sticker shock when you look at the cost of printing and mailing and postage because their pricing is anchored on digital. But the questions we get for that, it's really just, you know, how does it work? What does it cost? What can we expect? How many campaigns, how many postcards should we send out? What kind of data can you get? Those are some of the questions we usually get.
I would think that the data would be the most important question, you know, because the data provides you the information where you send, who you send, the demographics, how old are they, what are their interests. You know, it's kind of the same thing with Facebook ads. You know, you're looking at those demographics, which, as you said, you know, earlier in, you know, the AOL days, everybody with a pulse got it. It's like, oh, my God. And if you didn't get to the box, you know, I never have mail come to my house. It always goes to a P.O. box. And if you didn't get there within 2 weeks, they would hand you a box. It'd be behind the desk. You know, Mrs. Griffiths, you've got more stuff. It's like, oh, goody. And, of course, you couldn't say, just toss it, because they weren't permitted.
Yeah, a lot of discs. I mean, the data is very important.
I bet.
And it's, you know, we have clients that will mail out in-house campaigns, in-house lists, which basically means like their database of clients, their database of prospects, you know, it's their list. Or they'll look for outside sources to rent data. And we, you know, it's not something that we do personally. But we have partners for it. So we'll just, you know, make that introduction, or we'll coordinate with them and figure out, okay, who do you want to mail to, what SIC codes, what job titles, what interests, what behavioral selects are you looking for, and then we'll craft together that audience for them. And the great thing about, you mentioned blending print and digital before, the good thing the thing we have the ability to do now is, you know, we can get that data from the data provider, and then they're using it for a postcard campaign. But then we can also, or whatever the mail piece is, self-mailer, you know, package or whatever, then we can use that list and upload it to Facebook or Instagram, LinkedIn, and we can run ads to the people on that list that match. So essentially what happens is you've got the postcard or the mail piece going out, and then a certain percentage of those people that get the mail piece, they're also going to see ads in their feeds, in their social feeds. So it creates like this omni-channel effect where the company is everywhere in their mailbox, you know, in their social feeds, in their email, if the list has email. This is a lot more for marketers to take advantage of now.
And, you know, if nothing else, you're going to get that name recognition by all these touch points.
Yes.
And one of the things I was going to ask you was that you had mentioned 5 ways to drive leads with digital marketing. I think you just touched on some of those. Are there any others that we need to share?
I think, you know, we usually see more leads. Of course, it depends on what you define as a lead. Is a lead someone asking you for a quote on your services? Is a lead someone opting into your newsletter? So it depends on what you define as a lead. But we generally speaking, we see more leads through search engine optimization and paid search ads. But you would expect that because someone has a need. They're going to Google or Bing or Yahoo, and they're searching for a solution. So you'd expect those to convert higher into leads. If you're defining a lead as a newsletter opt-in, you know, we're seeing a lot of success with using Facebook ads for email opt-ins because they have an ad objective that makes it very, very easy for someone to give them your email address. So say you run an ad, hey, opt into my newsletter for marketing tips or business tips or whatever. They click yes, I want to do that, and then a pop-up shows. And Facebook just pre-populates your name and your email that they already have on you. And so you literally just have to click accept. And in 2 clicks, you've given the person your email address and you've opted into their newsletter. So it makes it very easy to collect emails. So that's we're seeing that work very well right now, using Facebook to collect email opt-ins.
See, that wouldn't work for me because, again, my personal email address, which I don't share. But I can see where you're going. I'm just thinking of my own. I'm being selfish. I can understand why that would work for a lot of people because they're not as fierce about their email as I am. but that's actually really smart. Is there anything else that people, you know, can be doing to have those leads come with digital marketing? And Facebook, LinkedIn is obviously, you know, business to business. It's a great place to be. Is there anything else you can share?
You know, yeah, LinkedIn actually has the same, since Microsoft bought them, they've really started to beef up their advertising platform. And LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn's a good advertising option for B2B because, you know, you could target by job title, you could target by industry, you can even target by what groups they belong to. So even if you're selling to a real niche audience, there's most likely a group on LinkedIn that they belong to. And so you could target that group. And LinkedIn now has that ad objective where you can get email opt-ins very easily. It just facilitates that whole process in a smooth way that makes the conversion rates go up. But I would also go foundation to the foundation too, Denise. I would also look at your website. And, you know, I'm only saying this, it's going to sound basic, but because we see it all the time, I think it's still worth mentioning, is making sure that your website is mobile responsive, that the load speed is fast. Most sites are mobile responsive nowadays, but the load speed is usually not good. And if you're not mobile responsive, and if your site doesn't load fast, it's going to affect your leads. And then just having like a really obvious call to action. That's something we see not happening a lot, actually, is the call to actions aren't obvious. Like you're not, the phone number is not in a clear, it's not obvious on the site. It's not at the top. There's no forms on like service or product pages. There's no buttons to take the next step. There's just no clear direction as to what the person should do or how they can give you your contact information. So we always look for quick little tweaks that we can make. Even something as simple as like adding a bar at the top of your site with your phone number and your email address that's sticky, that follows you as you scroll, that small little tweak is going to increase your leads.
Exactly. I have the same conversations with my clients, and a lot of them, you know, they're so proud of their work, and they should be, but they're writing as if they're writing a white paper. And I will often say, Bart Simpson. Write like you're talking to Bart Simpson. Keep it simple, stupid. And they're like, no, I don't want to do it. Okay. But people are not going to take the time to read this dissertation. You have to keep it simple. Bart Simpson.
Yeah,
that's all I can
like
say.
Like a wall of text. Like notes.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, you have to have those touch points on your website at all. I mean, look, I will even put the phone number in the SEO. SEO tags. I mean, it's got to get out there, right?
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
Yeah,
you want to
do
SEO now. Like Google can see, you know, if they're showing your website organically for the first position, but no one ever clicks on it, then that's a pretty strong sign to them that listing doesn't belong there. Or if people click and they bounce back right away. But that's why the title tag, the meta description. They need to be well written, and then yeah, have call to actions like the phone number or click here now or whatever the call to action is.
Exactly. Schedule your free consultation, whatever it is. Okay, so yep. We talked about 5 ways to drive leads with digital marketing. Now let's move over to 5 effective paid online advertising strategies, because that could be a little bit different, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean there's some overlap from what I said before, because you want to, it depends what your target audience is, but Facebook is really good for retargeting. There's less interest now that you can take advantage of because of all the privacy issues that they have. But you could still, they still have a healthy amount of interest selects that you could take advantage of. It's very good for retargeting though. So basically that means you put a pixel on your site. When someone comes to your site and they leave, they see your ad in their Facebook feed and Instagram. It's a way to amplify all your efforts. So we always recommend remarketing for all clients as a paid advertising strategy. You want to remarket on Google, which means Google's network, you know, like weather.com or other sites. And then you want to retarget in Facebook and Instagram and even LinkedIn if it makes sense. Because what happens is anything you do, all that work is driving people to your website. And when they leave, they're going to see your ads, follow them around social, Google, and it just, first of all, it's a brand awareness play, but also brings them back to your site. So definitely take advantage of Facebook. Definitely take advantage of LinkedIn and Instagram. There's those social channels. Google Ads, we're still seeing them work very well. You just want to make sure that you're taking advantage of all the features that Google Ads enable. So for example, you know, adding your phone number to the ad, adding your address, adding what's called site links. I'm not sure how granular you want me to get here, but adding what's called site links, call outs. You know, Google essentially gives you the ability to create this monster ad now with all these options for your ad. It's not just what it used to be, like a headline and a little description. It's much beefier now.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. And then I have a quick question.
No, I was going to say that, It's in their best interest, because the bigger the ad, the more clicks they get. But it's also in your interest because you want to, if someone's doing a search for one of your important keywords, you want to have a fighting chance of getting that person to click your ad and go to your site.
Exactly. Now listen, on Google Ads, I don't know about you, but I don't do them because I'm not an expert. I always tell my clients, I can recommend you. yes, I think you should do them, and here is why, but I'm not your person, and I will refer them to somebody who is an expert at that. What are your thoughts on that? Because I think you can spend a lot of money if you don't know what the heck you're doing in Google.
Yeah, it's very easy to waste money on Google Ads, and we just had a client sign on with us that was using a previous agency for Google Ads, and their leads were tanking pretty bad for the last several months, and then we took over. And sometimes it's like the things you don't see. Like for example, they had the ad campaign set up, and it was very overly complicated. So we went in there, we simplified things, restructured the campaigns differently, and then their leads shot right back up. So it's very easy to waste money, but also Google Ads, because of all the tweaks they made to it, it's very complicated. So it's very easy to overcomplicate the campaigns, and then that hurts your results.
Oh, I've seen that time and time again. So let's kind of go back to the website. So the SEO on the website is really important, and I think a lot of even web developers, or let me rephrase that, web designers, because we're different animals. I'm a developer. You know, I build from the skin out. I mean, everything is there. But a lot of designers will just build you what I call a really pretty boat anchor. Didn't do you much good, but it looks great. But let's talk about what is really needed in the website so that somebody like you can come in and say, okay, you're looking pretty good here. Let's make a few changes. We can add a few little things over here in the meta tags and descriptions and obviously the alt tags. And those who are listening, those are the descriptions of your images for the most part. There's a lot of things, small things, or they're not really small things, but they're very important things. So let's just say that somebody has already got this pretty well worked up in their website. How does this help with the SEO, let's say Google? Because you're going to be pulling a lot of information off of that website, aren't you? How does that actually mesh together?
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to mention is, because we see this a lot, and when someone's designing their website or they're redesigning their website, what happens is typically the web designer, the web developer, they'll put a noindex tag on the site as it's being built out. So maybe the site's being built out on like a test server.
And Google can't
server.
Read it. They don't follow you. It's insane.
Yeah, because they launched the website, but then they forget to remove the noindex tag. We had a client come to us where it's kind of a sad story too, because they had this website that was killing it in Google, and they redesigned it, and this new site looked beautiful. But the designer forgot to remove the noindex tag, and it was like that for 3 months because they could not figure out why their rankings were going down. The developer didn't know, and it was as simple as the noindex tag was on the site, and they didn't notice it. And we noticed it because they contacted us through our web form and tried to get help, and we noticed it. And we were able to recover the rankings a little bit, but permanent damage had been done. Because when you leave that noindex tag on there for several months, it's really hard to get all your rankings. They got some of the rankings back, but at that point, permanent damage had been done. Because if you think about it, Google, if they see that noindex tag on your site for several months, well, they're like, okay, well, I guess they don't want us to index it. So they just drop you, and your rankings get replaced with someone else. And it's really hard to then dislodge that again, because it's already, you've already been removed. So that's like, I went on a little bit long about that, because I see it a lot, and it's really, it's something to look out for. It can be really damaging to your business. But besides that,
It really ought to be, though, when you're a web developer, and if you are, or a designer, listen to us, have a checklist. Have a before and after launch checklist. And if that's not on there in bright red, you just made a huge mistake.
Yeah, exactly. A checklist is a perfect idea.
I use one. Trust me. I mean, I do this in my sleep, but I still use a checklist because each client is different. There's something that's going to, be needed on one site and something that nobody cares. So we have to be very careful with that.
Yeah. But then in terms of structuring the site, I mean, we talked about the call to actions. We like sticky headers, but, it depends on the site. Call to actions, forms, call to actions on every page, forms that are pretty not too long. We have some clients that come to us with forms that, you know, would take like 30 minutes to fill out. So you want to simplify what you're asking a prospect for. In terms of SEO, we like to see, like image alt tags, clearly defined metadata, title tag, meta descriptions with keywords in it. We also like to see a site with, enough content on it, because if it's a site with no content, there's really nothing for us to optimize. There's really nothing for us to, for Google to show, to rank you for. Another thing we look for is if a site has, let's say you have a service page. So you have a service page with all your services listed out. Ideally, you want a page for every service, because that's going to enable you to,
See, that's what I think, too. You can have one page that says, okay, here's our service. We're going to build pools. Okay, great. Click on pools. Then you go to a completely different page because Google likes that. And now you've got something that you can isolate when you're putting up an ad. I feel so smart right now.
Exactly.
Okay, keep going.
No, you're right to that, because it's good for because for Google Ads, it's all about relevancy, your quality score. And so if you're bidding on keywords around a particular service, you need to have a page about that service to drive them to. And it can't just be an all-encompassing catch-all service page. And the same thing with SEO, it's all about relevancy. So if you want to rank for a specific service, you need to have a page about that service, and it has to have a healthy amount of content on it. So the catch-all service page where everything's mentioned, it's just not a good ideal setup for Google Ads or for SEO. So we look for that too. And we're actually in the process. When we sign on a new client, we just got a new one that sells custom iron doors, and he had the same thing, like a catch-all service page. So now we're building out all those pages, all the content, just to give him a fighting chance of ranking for additional keywords. And so that's something we look for. And then I think I said before, it's, the load speed, super crucial. It's a ranking factor in Google. Sometimes with certain websites, you can only get it so fast, depending on what's going on in the background, but we always try to make them as fast as possible. And sometimes it's an issue with your hosting. Sometimes it's an issue with the images. Sometimes it's an issue with just the code in the background. But we always try to make the sites as fast as we can.
Speaking of hosting, and this has been a bugaboo of mine forever. I mean, I like GoDaddy. I've spent a lot of money with GoDaddy on domain names. I will not host with them. I will not. And I have actually been known to tell clients, if you won't move from GoDaddy hosting, you'll need to find somebody else. I can't work with it. It's so bad. So that's my vent.
Yes.
I mean, talk about slow. Oh, my God. I mean, they overcrowd those servers, and it's bad. It's really, really bad. Okay, so I've got a whole list of things here. I'm looking and go, okay, we're making good progress here. So we talked about improving your website ranking on Google, which is so important. Oh, and I know what I wanted to ask you too, Ryan. A lot of people don't understand, I don't think, that, you can put up a website and go, okay, it's great, it's done, we've done all of the SEO and we've got all this. But Google also wants to see fresh content, isn't that correct? You've got to update your site. And a lot of people go, well, I don't want to blog, I don't want to do things. Well, where are you going with this? What do you want us to do here?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times companies won't understand that SEO is an ongoing thing. So you're right, you can do an initial optimization of all your pages, the like keywords, titles, metas, alt tags, all that. But what's ongoing for SEO is, yes, fresh content is very important. And we're actually seeing with Google search results, at the time of this conversation, we're seeing a resurgence of informational content in Google search results. So they seem to be ranking informational content more. And I guess it makes sense, because their whole thing is like user experience. And most people, unless if they're clicking on a paid ad, they don't want to be sold. They're looking for information on something. And so we're seeing more and more information ranking. It depends on the keyword, but overall, as an overall statement, we're seeing more informational articles rank in Google, and that's where a blog comes in. So you want to have a really good blog strategy. Ideally, that is, yes, all the blog content should be keyword optimized, but you want to answer questions, especially with voice search becoming more and more popular. You want to answer questions with detailed responses, all of that.
Oh, you just taught me something. Okay, so When people are blogging, and I get this question all the time, and there's no Bible about it, there's no real way to answer it, but what do you find, we're talking about informational kind of blogs, which I like, because for me, when I'm going to a website, I'm asking a question. I want you to solve my pain point. I need some advice. I mean, that's pretty much why I'm there to start. What are you finding, or are you finding, are the best types? I mean, I like bullet points. Just give it to me, make it quick, make it short, give me the information I need, and I'll ruminate over it. I'll find out what I need to do next. But are you finding that the really long blog posts are doing better, or the quick, sweet, and to-the-point blog posts?
Yeah, so what we're seeing, there's actually a few things I can say here in terms of the layout of the blog and then blog strategy. So I'll talk about the layout first. Usually, if you're doing like 300, 400 word blogs, it's not enough nowadays to compete. I mean, yes, if your website is like, this major authoritative site like CNN.com, you can get almost anything to rank. But in generally speaking, for this typical small business, you want to have meatier content than that. So we try to strive for at least 600 words, sometimes more, up to 1,000 words. Usually speaking, longer form content ranks better, and it ranks for more keywords. I think that's really the key, is it ranks for more keywords, because now Google's their algorithm is really, it's much more sophisticated. So they can rank one page for a lot of keywords, because they can understand that this page is relevant to this keyword, but this keyword is also relevant to this, that, and this. So a long form blog post can rank for a lot of keywords. And so we typically try to go for at least 600, 800, 900, to 1,000 words. I like bullet points. Yes, I like subheadlines, short paragraphs. We like to recap at the end, like, here's what you learned. Images with alt tags. There's a well-structured blog post. The reason I like the bullet points and the short paragraphs and the subheadlines is not just because it's easier for the person to read, which that's very important, but also we find that when you do that to a blog post, at least right now, it increases the chance of Google showing it as like that featured post that you see at the top. If you ask a question, sometimes you'll see like a box at the top of Google, and it sort of answers your question. And so when you lay out the blog that way, make it very easy for Google to skim, we've seen that it increases the odds of it showing up in that featured snippet area at the top of Google.
Right. And, on a slightly different point, with the shorter ones where you've got maybe just a very short paragraph or just a very pertinent sentence, which I like to have at least one standalone sentence in any blog that I've, posted for my clients or written for myself, because that can then be taken and you can create a meme with it. You can create a graphic. It goes on Instagram. It can go on Pinterest. It can go wherever you need it. So it's just another thing to think about, because that's now becomes part of your social media strategy.
Can I give two more strategies with blogs? You actually made me think.
Oh, gosh,
I had
yeah,
one,
keep
you,
talking.
Just give me another.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So two things we're seeing work well. What you just said triggered one of the ideas for me. So if you have a blog that's like, I don't know, 7 ways to whatever, whatever, okay, and it's doing really well, getting a lot of traffic, a lot of impressions in Google, all that, what you can do is then take that blog post and then break it out to 7 more articles. So that topic is really popular, 7 ways to whatever, you can then create 7 additional blogs on top of that. So basically take each of the 7 ways and then expand on it into more content and sort of create like a series of blogs that you all interlink and just make the initial blog post even more effective. So we've seen that work. But then a more manageable strategy that we've seen increase organic, because that what I just described, it takes a lot of work, but this strategy is a little more easier to manage, and we've seen really effective organic gains from doing it. So same thing, you see that blog is doing really, really well in Google. You have your site hooked into Search Console, Google Search Console, which used to be called Google Webmaster Tools. You see it's getting a lot of impressions. You look in Google Analytics, you see it's getting a lot of traffic organically. What we see always increase organic traffic, at least right now, is upgrading that blog post. So what that means is leave the content the way it is, maybe edit it a little bit if some of the stuff is out of date or needs to be updated, but then add to that content. So if it's a 600-word blog post, scan it, make sure all the information is still accurate, but then add maybe another 300, 400 words of keyword-rich content to that blog. So now it becomes 1,000 words, and that almost always increases organic traffic because you're basically taking a blog post that Google likes and you're making it even better. But just don't change the title tag, don't change the meta description, don't change the URL, just add more content to it, and it always, at least in our experience, it always helps.
I do that. You know, it makes sense for me to do that because you'll see on my clients, I'll look at some blogs that are a couple years old, but they're still relevant. So we'll just rework it a little bit, clean it up, and, you know, off we go. There we go again. I have a quick question, though, because I have a lot of clients, I'm sure you do too, who will write articles on Medium or Thrive Global or, you know, there used to be a lot of different places, but these seem to be the two big ones now. And this always comes up, and I have to be honest, I'm not quite sure how to answer it. And the question is, well, you know, I don't really have time to write a new, you know, blog post or an article. Can we take my Thrive Global or my Medium and just post it over there? And my instinct is to say no. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I would say no as well because
it's tricky,
content.
Huh?
Yeah, there's ways around it. You can so let's say you write the blog on Medium first, and Google indexes it, okay, and then you can take that blog post and you can put it on your blog. But then what you want to do is you want to link back to the Medium article to show Google that, first of all, they know that they indexed the Medium article first, okay? And then they see the same article on your site, but it links back to the Medium article. So that's showing Google that the Medium article is like the original. That's the way to do it if you absolutely want to. But I always recommend not taking any chances with duplicate content. The reason you would use Medium is because it's got, and actually something I'm experimenting with right now, I'm creating articles on Medium because it has like a built-in audience, and it's a good way to maybe get like thought leadership content out there to an audience that might not know about you because they're not on your blog. But I wouldn't duplicate it if you can help it. If you absolutely insist on doing it, then I would say, you know, use that link strategy that I mentioned.
That's about the only way to do, and that's been my thinking. Most of the times I'll just, that's not a good idea. But I haven't, maybe that was just instinctive. I wasn't really entirely sure why it was a bad idea. I mean, I knew that it's already out there. It's already been indexed by Google. I knew that. And I think that was always the reason I went, ooh, that seems a little skeevy. That's like cheating. Let's not do that. So I feel better.
Yeah.
Now I've got a real argument I can give them. I mean, if they want to do it, you know, I'll insist that we link it back and say, okay, this was first, you know, posted on Thrive or wherever the heck it was. But even that, I think, might be not all that effective. But, yeah, thank you for that because it's always bugged me. Okay, so now let's move on to but we've been covering a lot of territory. And I hope the audience understands that what we're talking about is not just one thing. It's a strategy. It's a wide, deep strategy that you need to get into if you really want to be. You always hear me say this on the radio, get your voice heard. And that's, you know, that's on every place. That's Instagram. It's Pinterest. It's LinkedIn. Get your voice heard. People say, oh, my God, I've got a website. How are your clients going to find it? How are you driving them? Oh, I don't know. I guess people just find it. That's not a strategy. So that's all I've got to say on it. Do you have anything to kind of add to that?
I mean, maybe in 1998 that worked, but nowadays there's just so many sites out there, and everyone even. I mean, we do a lot of digital work for industrial manufacturers, so even that industry is starting to catch on that, you know, mostly everyone goes to Google or, you know, Bing or Yahoo to search for stuff. Like, digital is a thing. And so even they're spending money in marketing. So you think about how many sites there are, how many new sites come out every day, and you look at your competition, mostly everyone's doing some form of digital marketing, which increases the competitiveness of everything. And so you have a site up there, but you have to do some form of marketing to get it known because no one's just going to find it.
I know. And, you know, all of my clients are aware of that. But back in the day, they're like, well, let's just build it and see what happens. You know, build it and they will come. No, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Even when I first started doing this and oh God, I don't even know how long it was now, 2000 something or another. But it's you know, even then I knew, no, you've got to actively talk with people and let them know what you're doing and invite them to come see what's up and how you can help them. And even then I knew that. Okay, so one of the things I've heard you say is small business marketing does not equal small ideas, and I love that. So expand on that a bit.
Well, because I feel like digital, it's sort of leveled the playing field because, yeah, we might not have the budgets of Coca-Cola or Geico, okay, but we all have access to the same strategies. And so small business marketing doesn't need to be small because we all have the same tools that they have access to. They just have more ad spend and bigger teams, but we can take advantage of the same strategies. So we always recommend our small business clients to think bigger, think multiple channels. You don't want to rely on just one channel. I mean, Google SEO, I mean, that thing's changed so often that you can't really, even a number one ranking in Google, it doesn't mean as much as it used to, because if you look at the search results, everything, the top is so ad heavy, and then you've got like the featured snippet and you've got the question and answer. And so a number one ranking might only start appearing on like halfway down the page. So you can't just rely on one channel. You have to be, obviously budget is a factor, okay, and how much time you have to do things, but you want to be across multiple channels. You don't want to rely on one channel. And we find it honestly works better too, because they all do have like a rising effect, like the phrase rising tide lifts all boats or whatever it is. It is true. Like, you know, if the more visible you are in organic, it's going to help your brand. The more you're doing ads, usually if you're doing a lot of Google ads, it increases your organics. People are searching for you more. The more you're running Facebook ads, you usually see an increase in SEO, because it's just increasing your overall awareness and activity. And so we see a lot of synergy between all the channels. So that's why I say that small business marketing, it shouldn't be small. It doesn't have to be small.
Exactly. And listen, to our audience, I would really, I hope you take notes, and I hope you hear this over and over again and take notes. But there is so much of what we're talking about that you should not be doing on your own. You really shouldn't hire experts. I mean, if you want to make the investment to build your business, get known, become a big presence online, hire experts to help you. Otherwise, you're going to make a ton of mistakes. It's going to cost you money, and it's going to frustrate you, and you may quit. So
that's my advice for the day. I mean, obviously, I think that's great advice because we're an agency. But if you think about it logically, though, it does make a lot of sense, because you can do it on your own, and you eventually might get there. But an agency, a good one, they're going to speed up the process. They're going to avoid the mistakes that you'd make, because we or other agencies, we do it for a living. So we're going to speed up the process. We're going to do it better in most cases, I would hope. And we're going to make less mistakes. So I think it's a smart way to do it. But I also think, though, too, just to be pretty devil's advocate, I think also, you know, there's something to be said for at least knowing what you're doing. So maybe you're dabbling in stuff a little bit, so you're educated on it. So when you are hiring an agency, you're a little more educated, so you know what to look for, how to sniff out the good agency versus the bad agency, besides just, you know, asking for referrals and looking at the reviews and all that. You need to have a little bit of education about what you're hiring for, but in terms of getting your feet wet and getting your hands dirty, agency is going to speed up the process.
We do a lot of social media marketing for our clients, and I will, you know, tell them, listen, you're going to work alongside of me with this, because if you know nothing about social media marketing, I don't want you or your office manager walking in and making a big mess out of something that we just did for you. So you either already know something about it, or we're going to train you a bit, because you can't just hand off big chunks of your business and hope it works. You've got to know what it is that you're asking for.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a bit about the lessons that you've learned about. Do you know that we've only got about 10 more minutes? That's amazing. Lessons learned from being the third generation in a 50-year-plus family business. What are some of the biggest lessons?
Yeah, so let me, because this could be a conversation all by itself, so I'll I'll boil it down to, I think, what stands out the most to me. Because I started here 16 years ago. My roles changed a lot. The company's changed a lot. And what I've noticed just from being in the business and even going back to high school is, the reason I think we've lasted 53 years, I'm not turning this into a sales pitch for us. I'm just trying to think of, like, takeaways that your audience can pull from this, is that we've adapted to the times. So direct mail has changed. We've changed with it. We've changed with the equipment that's available to us, new technology offering to our clients, getting better data providers, just rolling with the change of direct mail, okay? And then digital came on, taking a step back, we added creative to the whole mix, and then digital came in, is so huge now, so we started adding digital. So we've adapted. I think that adaptation is very, very important for businesses. You know, just don't bury your head in the sand. Think strategically, like, where is my business going to be in 5-10 years? You know, what do I need to do to set it up to adapt with those changes and thrive? So that's one thing. And I think also, I think what I'm seeing now, right now, especially as I transition into more of a leadership role with my brothers and my uncle who are partners in the business with me, is culture is, and I know this is sort of like a topic that's mentioned a lot, but culture is, I'm living it right now, so I can speak on it. Culture is super, super important. I mean, we're interviewing for positions right now, and every single person that we interview asks about culture. So it's important, and it just keeps people here happy, keeps the team members, you know, there's less turnover when everyone's happy. They do better work because they don't come to work hating what they do, and it just creates a better work environment. We've just seen, it takes effort, though. It does. It takes
a lot of people. Yeah. They have to be invested in the whole message, don't they?
They do. And you have to just, like, think of things like, you know, we do work from home days now, and birthday breakfast for everyone, monthly lunches, flexible work hours, you know, just trying to think of new ways to do it. And but we've seen it's just super, super important. So I would say that as well, as you build out your team, be deliberate about the culture. Those are two things I could talk more about. I know we're running out of time.
You know, we should probably schedule another talk about exactly that, because I think it's important. Look, even though I don't have employees in my home, which is where my office is, I have a large team. And you're right, even there, the culture is important. How do I treat them? What can they expect? You know, how can they kind of give me ideas or leads or information? It's not just me going, hey, do this and thanks. You know, it's, you really have to work with people. And all of my team, I mean, they're all over the country. And even in the United States, we have different cultures, you know, speaking. I mean, I'm in the South. We speak differently than most of everybody else. And, you know, in even those small idiosyncrasies can tank you if you're not very careful. I know that sounds silly, but it can happen.
And people will leave. You know, I interviewed, phone screened a person a couple of days ago, and he's at a company where the culture is terrible. People are fighting, and he's talking to me like, save me, you know, because he's like, he just can't deal with it anymore. So people will leave you if the culture is bad, and that turnover, especially for a small business, is brutal, because you're a small business. You've got a lot of work, but you have a lot of team members, and so, like, one person leaves, it just is very disruptive. So there's several reasons to consider the culture, and I don't know, this is really important.
Definitely. Okay, we've got a couple more minutes. Let's talk about why and how business owners should really invest in regular self-improvement. And to me, that can be reading. You know, it can be going, you know, really investing in something that's going to make you feel better physically, mentally, whatever it is. So let's talk about that, because it's so important. I mean, you don't just get out of bed, go to work, go home. I mean, you've got to have these areas where you are just going, I can do better. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, this is like one of my favorite topics, honestly. I've started getting big in self-improvement I think I've always been involved in it, but I've interested in it, but I've really started to jack it up the intensity last couple of years I think it's a byproduct of my role here changing, because I don't consider myself naturally a leader, and I've got ways to go, but as, like, the team's grown here and that's my role, I've been like, okay, well, I've got to show up better. I've got to be a better person, just to be able to handle this role, you know, and stresses that come with it and stuff like that. And so what's big for me and what I recommend everyone to do is a morning routine. And that, again, is another topic that's kind of mentioned so often, but if you just commit to it for 30 days, what I found, like, I had this morning routine where I meditate, I do a little bit of exercise, gratitude practice, listening to positive podcasts. This one podcast called 7 Good Minutes. So I did this whole routine. It fits for me. It's like 25 minutes. And it just, when you start your day off on your own terms, when you start your day off right and feed yourself that nourishing, you know, either the exercise or the meditation, it just has a trickle effect for the rest of the day. You show up better at work. And I don't know, ever since I've been doing it, I find that I'm just better at my job. I feel like I'm a better husband. I feel like I'm just getting like a little woo here, but it's just, it's been really important. I think it just helps you show up better as a person. It just makes you stronger because you've got to be able to work on yourself in order for you to be the person you can be, you know? And so if you're getting up late, if you're eating crappy food, if you're not exercising, like, how can you expect yourself to be at the maximum potential? It's just impossible. It's like never changing the oil in your car or changing tires and expecting the car to run and drive smoothly. It's just impossible.
Exactly. And I love what you said about gratitude, because that's important. I mean, I think it was Mel Robbins. I don't know if you know who she is. You know, she does the 5-4-3-2-1. She's fantastic. And I listened to her quite a bit. But I think it was her where she said, listen, if you wake up and the first thing you are thinking is, oh, I don't want to get up. I don't want to do this. Guess what you just did to yourself? You just trained yourself to feel crappy. You really did. And I'm like you. The minute my eyes open, my mom sent me a birthday card one time that says, her eyes are open. Something about warn the devil, her eyes are open or something like that. But because I wake up and I hit the floor running, but I had to train myself to stay in bed, which that took some doing. It really did. I know it sounds silly, but, you know, I would open my eyes and go. And now I immediately just go, I stretch a bit and I kind of check in and I immediately say thank you to whoever's listening. You know, I live alone, but whoever, we're not always alone. I mean, we have something that's helping us, I think. Maybe it's our inner wisdom. I don't know. But I always, always, always say thank you. And then I dig a little bit deeper. What am I grateful for today? And I'm telling you, it makes my day. I totally understand you.
Yeah, you're rewiring your brain. I mean, I look at my morning routine as my, like, I do physical exercise after work, but then I look at my morning routine as like my exercise for my mindset and for my brain. And if anyone's listening, they think it's too woo-woo, like, I would just say, I'm going to give it a try for 30 days straight. And that's what I always recommend to people, give it a try for 30 days straight, and at least, like, try it before you just brush it off as, you know, baloney, you know?
It's not baloney at all. And there are so many different avenues available. I mean, podcasts, apps, you know, meditation apps, which I can't meditate. I've tried. It's not my thing. But there are so many things that you can do. Just wake up and decide to be grateful or understand that you've got wonderful things behind you and in front of you. And it doesn't matter where your day is going to go that day. You're going to start it out going, this is great. Thank you. And things do get easier for you. Ryan, where can people find you on the web before we run out of time here?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, and thanks everyone for listening. You can go to ballantyne.com/partner success. ballantyne.com/partner success. That's a special page for your listeners. And on there is an offer for me to do a free analysis of your website, of your marketing, everything. I do it via video, and there's no charge. So.
Oh, that is excellent. Say that again, and I will go back and put it in the show notes.
It's ballantyne.com/partner success, all one word, partner success.
Terrific. I had to write that down. Well, that is very kind of you, and I really appreciate it. Ryan, thank you so much for being here with us today. It's been a distinct pleasure speaking with you, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared. And I learned a couple, three things myself, and thank you for that. I'm always excited to find something that I can, you know, add to my own little resume, if you like. So anyway, my pleasure, and definitely we need to come back. And, you know, I'll talk with you about that after we finish this. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes and anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.